and welcome to the Courtney Turner Podcast. My guests today are two incredible women who are doing tremendous work to combat the WHO, and that means combating the UN and all of their evil agendas. That's how I perceive them. I do think they're evil. I think they are trying to strip the free will of humanity. If you've seen my recent episode, I talked about where their agenda is going. It is going towards an AI world society, which is essentially a digital prison. And they have laid out all of these blueprints. This is not speculation. This is not hyperbole. They have symposiums on it. They have full websites. They have white papers out. So if you haven't seen that, I just did an episode with Maria Z talking about the AI World Society. I try to mention it in really almost every podcast I do, just to try and sound the alarm so people understand what their plans are. And part of this, of course, includes stripping us of our medical freedoms and our bodily autonomy. And that is being done through the arm of the WHO, the World Health Organization. And we saw how instrumental they were during COVID. And of course, we are now coming up against another election cycle. And they love to stir up all sorts of chaos during those times. And this year is no different. So they are having their meeting. It is going to be at the end of May. And these ladies, Susie Olson-Corkin and Dr. Andrea Nazarenko, have put together a symposium to try and combat their plans so that we can preserve our medical freedoms. And they have invited me to be a part of this Inspired Global Leadership Summit. And I am incredibly honored, and I want to do whatever I can, and I want to inspire all of you to do whatever you feel called to do. But I am going to be doing a fundraiser for this because I'm struggling just to fund doing this podcast. So a trip to Geneva is a little bit outside of my reach at the moment. So if you want to help support us, and of course, a support in whatever way you feel called to do so. But we are doing a financial fundraiser. The Gives and Go link will be below. And you can go to that. But we're going to talk all about it today so you can learn more about it. And, of course, get involved in, there's lots of things we can do locally as well. So we're going to learn more about what they are doing and how we can combat the plans of the WHO. And before I ramble on any longer, of course, you can always support the podcast by going to the links below or go to the website, CourtneyTurner.com. That is Courtenay, CourtenayTurney. TURNER.com. And there are all sorts of ways that you can support me there. But of course, likes, shares, and subscribing helps me tremendously as well. So I appreciate all the support we can get. And without further ado, let's bring the ladies on. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you so much for that introduction, Courtney. It's so great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for what you're doing. This is so incredibly needed. I'm so grateful for your courage, your passion, and the amount of effort I know what this takes to put together to do. So let's give everybody a little background just for people who may not be familiar with both of you. Whoever wants to start, tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into this. I hate to use the word fight, but we are fighting for freedom here. So
yeah. I'll go ahead and start. My name is Susie. I got involved in this 16 years ago when my son was injured by vaccinations at one. He had a severe adverse reaction, was hospitalized, and suffered a brain injury. He's 17 now, and he can't speak verbally, but he spells through a letter board. So anyone, I'm an evangelist for this, Andrea can testify. Anyone that has not heard of Speller's Method, please go to spellers.com. For so long, our children were presumed to be mentally disabled, to be retarded. I mean, the things that we've heard are so severe, but my child is completely cognitively capable, and he's been able to prove his brilliance through spelling and through spellers.com. So I got involved then. I became an advocate for supporting people that have been vaccine injured. I started working legislatively back in 2014 when the West Coast was attacked by pharmaceutical industry and was trying to take away all of our exemptions for our kids to go to school without vaccines. It was an intense battle that put me on just a trajectory of fight, which then became fight or flight. And then I met Andrea a couple of years ago while we were speaking on a stage, and her and I looked at each other and were like, we need to stop just fighting and create the solutions in the world that we want to see. So that's how we came together and launched the Inspired Network.
Amazing. And that's
yeah, so I have been awakened to the problems with the medical industry since I was born, because I was vaccine injured myself as an infant. And at the time, people didn't really talk about it, and there was no movement associated with it, partly because it was pre-1986, and you were still able to say that you were injured by a drug at the time. And there's no real reason why I healed so quickly. It's not like my mother intentionally knew what she was doing. Yes, I was breastfed. Yes, I was fed real foods and did all of the things, but that was just because that was the way we lived, not because we were intentionally healing. But now when I look back, and particularly when my mom looks back, we look at people like Susie, who's a warrior in this fight, who has done so much to heal and help so many children, including her own. And it really brings us to tears, because especially my mom says, you could have been one of the injured. You could have been the dead. You could have been dead on the doctor's table and I handed you over. Why aren't you dead? Why were you the lucky one? And I feel that I still do have my verbal voice that it must be heard, because God gave me that voice for a reason and God gave me healing for a reason. And so for many years, like many people out there, I didn't know that there was even a movement available for me to participate in. I sort of went my little natural healthcare way. I married a chiropractor. We have 3 pharmaceutical free children, never even had as much as an Advil or a Tylenol in their whole life. You know, we live our little lifestyle in our happy little way, but I never really knew how to do better at this movement. We felt like lone rangers in our local community. You know, we brought people in and we had a nice following of naturally minded people. And then when I met Susie, it was like, you know, like all the synchronicities combined. I have my background and my training. My PhD is in clinical community psychology with an emphasis on quantitative psychology, which is a lot of syllables to say. What it basically means is the quantitative piece is that I focus on research methodology and improving the way we do research to answer real world questions. There's a lot of ways to lie with statistics, but when you know statistics in and out and you know how to build the models, you know how they're lying. The second piece in this community psychology piece is there's 2 ways to conceptualize human health and behavior. You could believe the problems with the individual and their biology, or you could believe the problem is with the environment in which the human being is embedded. I believe our problem is our environment. We don't have a couple of bad apples. We have a barrel that has been spoiled a long time ago. And if we want to heal our nation, if we want to heal our world, and most importantly, if we want to heal our children and create an environment where children could live happily and healthy, we need to focus on the environments that shape them. And so this is really where Susie and I came together. I think the moment we met each other, it was like, oh, my long lost sister, because our skills complemented each other, our passions ignited each other, and we are so committed to bringing people together in the world that are able to help each other. So it's not about what Susie and I know. It's not about our story, although our stories are what motivate us. It's about bringing people together who have the passion and the power to make real sustainable impact, and watching the magic happen when you simply give space to people to come together and the synergies happen.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing both of your stories and your testimonies. So you created both the Inspired Network and the Geneva Project. So can you talk about, you know, whatever elements of both that you want to and how they came to be? Yeah.
It's all you, Andrea.
Sure. So the Inspired Network is about how our movement functions. So, you know, if you look at a snapshot of the social movements that are going on right now in society, you have the health freedom movement, you have the freedom movement, you have the patriot movement, you have the regenerative agricultural movement. Yep. You could go down the list, and each one has a similar theme that is pushing back against governmental overstep, overreach, whether that's in our food, whether that's in our constitutional rights, whether that's on our healthcare. It's just the very specific thing that we care about most. So right. Susie came on the scene really because her child was injured by vaccines. That's the thing that pushed her forward. There's other mm-hmm. people out there who came on the scene because they care very much about the freedom of press or the freedom of speech. Others, the, you know, 2A, others, the pesticides in our food. We all care about something, but the thing that connects us all is our individual sovereignty and choices to live our lives the way that we want to live our lives without other people telling us how to live them, or more importantly, how our governments and our authorities implicitly and without our informed consent poison our environment. So I this is a side story. I live in an HOA and we don't spray anything. Obviously, we only eat organic food. We don't have any pesticides. And my neighbors right beside me decided to spray their yard with pesticides. And it was just a perfect example of kind of how our government functions too. I was like, you're polluting my air. Get it off. You sprayed my garden and my trees unintentionally. But that happens everywhere. Our soils are spoiled. Our air is polluted. Our water is filled with plastics, our oceans. And so we need to come together across social movements because we all care about these things. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. That is a political game that they play to keep us powerless. Right. So the Inspired Network is about being this backbone organization that ties a thread through people who care about similar things. We are not the ones who are, we're not the ones who are out there with the biggest Substack and the biggest podcast and the biggest delivery of our message. We are the ones connecting the communication through all of the different groups so that we can do what we do more efficiently. Part of my background is in evaluation and implementation science, which is the science of how you take good ideas and translate them to action. And mm-hmm. so we believe that if we could take data and we could take measurement and we could actually see setting goals and moving towards achievable outcomes, then we could see what works better. We could communicate what works better to everybody that is involved. And we can optimize how we're doing things. We don't all have to recreate the wheel. We don't all have to throw wet paper towels at the wall and hope they stick. We can use what we're doing and learn from each other to do it better. And so that's what the Inspired Network is about. It's about coming together. It's about building relationships, creating space for synergies to happen, and then using those relationships to create strategy for proactive change. One of the projects we're currently working on now, because it's the most salient, is clearly what's happening in Geneva with the WHO, with the atrocities of the world that they are engaging in. And so there's no better time to say, hey, world, let's come together. In fact, let's all come together in the place, in the belly of the beast, the place that marks darkness and gloom, really. I mean, Geneva represents the darkness that they are placing over all of us. They're trying to paint our world black and white, create division, create hate, so that we are powerless and they could control. They want us to believe that we are powerless, because when we do not believe we can help ourselves, they can control us. So we, the Inspired Network, along with really amazing killer team members, Free Humanity Project, and a lot of great organizations across Europe, we are coming together in Geneva, bringing the world together, people from all over at the level of humanity, not mm-hmm. the level of what movement you're affiliated in, not right. the level of what side of the aisle you're on, the level of humanity to say, if we want a better world, the onus is on us to create it. We need to stop asking our abusers to stop abusing us, expecting that they're going to change.
Right.
We believe that there's a better world out there. So let's come together and let's take the darkness of Geneva that they have and let's fill it with light. Let's bring the light back and create a clashing of ideologies for the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm into that. Let's talk a little bit about what they're doing. You talked about how they're creating division, that they're literally teaching like black and white. They're now trying to do, you know, like Senkoist medicine, essentially. They're trying to teach us that somehow we should literally give preferential treatment in medicine based on skin color. They're bringing DEI and all of these, you know, acronyms into medicine and really just completely straying away from any real logic of what the foundations of medical principles are. And we saw this all through COVID, you know, bringing in all sorts of policies and really just tyrannical measures that had no scientific merit at all. Mm-hmm. And some of us were screaming about that from the very beginning. And, you know, we were called crazy. And then, of course, these studies have come out since then showing that not only were a lot of the protocols that they were insisting upon, mandating, not helping, but they were actually detrimental and causing harm. So let's talk about some things that they are trying to do, you know, in this next meeting and why this needs to be stopped.
Absolutely. So what they're doing during World Health Assembly Week, which is May 27th, Susie, did I have that date right? May 27th through June 1st, is that they are voting on two documents. The first is what is known as the Pandemic Treaty, which is a treaty that, according to them, is the spirit of creating a better preparedness and readiness response to future pandemics. Sounds beautiful on the surface, right? Like, what a utopia.
It always does. Right?
What a beautiful place.
They have a great marketing team.
Right?
I need their marketing team, yes.
You read their things and you're like, this is utopia. Of course I want to live here. But it needs to truly be read in the context of what is known as the International Health Regulations, the IHR amendments. And those are the policies that govern how the member states participate in the WHO. And what we see, and these international health regulations have always been in existence because they are the policies and the regulations that guide this international governing body, but they have substantially amended them now. And what we see with their amendments is that many of the choices that they have made would limit and take away individual sovereignty, and through the collusion with our domestic governments, truly undermine our constitution in a lot of ways, because they are taking control. The things that are most salient to me are that they are taking control of information and they are taking control of health medical decisions. So when they say something is not, is disinformation, right? Then it becomes disinformation. And what we saw through the pandemic and for the decades prior to the pandemic, what they deem as information is not necessarily what's true. We do have natural immunity. We do have decades of medicine like homeopathy and natural medicine, chiropractic. All of these natural modalities of medicine are valid, right? They work. Yep. We see that they work. We saw that ivermectin worked and remdesivir killed people. And yet if you talked about ivermectin, you were labeled as a disinformation spreader. And so this is very scary. And to add to that, what they have expanded their scope to include are things like climate change, energy. You know, you could go down the list of all of these different domains, the environmental pieces, and you could see how they're amping up, because what they're saying is, how do we exist within the world? So the WHO has expanded their scope beyond the epidemiology of pathogens to include any potential risk. And where that becomes scary is that they get to define what the risk is. And we know that they are a corrupt organization that will use the perception of risk for their self-gain and their self-interest. And so it creates this tautological loop of we are the ones who tell you if there's a risk. If you question our risk, we label you as disinformation and we censor you, taking away your free speech, even though your constitution guarantees it. Yeah. We have colluded with your governments to allow these policies and laws to get placed. And if you try to treat yourself in a different modality, we will shut you down because it doesn't fit the narrative we want. you add to that all of the different systems, and you could say, well, they're the ones investing in or helping to invest in. In fact, there's articles of the IHR Amendments and Pandemic Treaty that talk about research and development. Well, you could be pretty sure that the research and development that they're investing in is not going to be the plants that you could go out into your garden and grow. They're going to be the vaccines that make them a lot of money. And, you know, if we kill a few people or a few million, I guess that's a casualty of their war. But that's what they're investing in. And so information and disinformation becomes a product of their strategy. They're going to invest in what they want us to know, and they're going to eradicate all of the information that they don't want us to know. And when they own the tech, they own the research, and they own the treatments, it becomes very hard for us to reconnect. This, again, is why the Inspire Network is so important, because when we cannot rely on our current systems, we must rely on relationships and sharing our voice, because that is the piece. The human-to-human connection is the piece they could never take away from us. They could strip our publishers, they could strip our internet, they could strip everything of our knowledge, but they can never stop a grandmother from teaching a grandchild how to help the common cold. And so we must always be connected at the human level in order for us to take them on in the future.
Absolutely. I want to get your take, Susie, but before I do, I'm just going to interject there, because that's why they had to isolate us during 2020, because they did not want people. They knew that the one thing that would be a bulwark against all of their plans is if people just share information. It's so much more powerful than even the internet, is that human to human connection. You know, they all the studies showed, and we saw this, you know, the antithesis of this during COVID, where the one thing that increases longevity is being surrounded by loved ones. It is personal relationships. It is interpersonal, engagement and interaction, even more so. I mean, I'm not going to completely demonize all of technology. I think, any powerful tool can be used for good. It can be used for, detriment. But I think that there's a lot of great benefit of the fact that we're having this conversation here, right? So I'm not going to completely throw out the baby with the bathwater, but they know that in-person communication is so incredibly healing and powerful. And that is part of why they are, continually trying to erode it. And that's why they want to put us into a literal metaverse, a digital society where we don't have that. They've already done this. I just talked about it on an episode where they had an island where the climate crisis, quote unquote, supposedly they were going to drown. The ocean was going to swallow this island whole. And they keep saying this, but meanwhile, you look at all the elites and they keep buying beachfront property. So somehow it doesn't apply to them. They have some safeguard against it because they're buying multi-million dollar homes on waterfront property, even though supposedly it's going to be swallowed whole. But that's what they convinced them. They evacuated the entire island, and then they told them they could only engage with their home and their loved ones through essentially a metaverse. And that is what they're trying to do. So I think it is so important, whatever we can do to keep to maintain the in-person relationship. It was Tuvalu. And then they put all the people they took them all, evacuated them, put them in Australia. But the other thing I wanted to address is just, how, when you're talking about the research that they're doing, I can't remember the name of the project, but I know it was the Zuckerbergs who put in something like $400 million. I mean, it was, I don't quote me on the number, but it was an absurd amount of money into pandemic or, research, essentially into, these pathogen kind of research. And What we found throughout history, though, is that whenever they do this kind of research, it seems like people seem to be pretty resilient, and most of the outbreaks of endemics and pandemics seem to occur right outside, bioweaponeer labs. just coincidentally, they're doing research on this function. And suddenly we have an outbreak. So, I don't want to say that this is what it was. Chan Zuckerberg BioHub Network. And I don't remember the dollar amount, but it was an insane amount of money. And, you know, it's always couched in platitudes that they're trying to protect us all, you know, and somehow they're going to save the world. But the reality is, when you look throughout history, it does seem like all of this research leads to people getting sick more often than not helping them. So I think we need to be very concerned about that. And we also need to recognize the WHO is an extension of the UN. And the UN keeps talking about they're building a well-being economy, which, you know, you can say whatever about well-being. So if they're couching, you know, as you had mentioned, it's not just, you know, physical health. They're tying it to all sorts of the whole ecosystem health. And it's really all about advancing the 17 sustainable goals of the UN. And this well-being economy is really just neo-feudalism. I mean, it is like the next iteration of communism, but it, you know, with their corporate fascist technocratic agenda attached to it. And so that they can advance the 17 sustainable goals. And if you look at the 17 sustainable goals, it sounds great. You know, a lot of them.
I want to live in that world. It's beautiful. There's no hunger. Children are all educated. You know?
No poverty. No There's hunger. No poverty. Good health and well-being. Quality education. You know, it goes on. And these, of course, sound like great things. But yeah, good health and well-being, they are attaching it to this well-being. But the well-being is this you know, it is this circular economy, which is, it's a neo-feudal system. And when you talk about eviscerating the Constitution, that is what these amendments and this treaty will do, because we saw this through COVID, right? Essentially, it overrides our personal liberties that we have that are outlined through our Constitution. And if we enter this and we go along with it, it will say that basically the UN and the WHO can override, you know, all of our constitutional liberties. And that is really horrifying. All they have to do is declare some sort of emergency, you know, oh, we have disease X coming. And so now we have martial law. And that's not even coming from federal apparatus. That's coming from outside of our country. So I think people need to really understand what the possible ramifications are. And we need to stand up, and we cannot take it. And I think that, you know, as much as we need to fight them, I also want to encourage people locally to take action. You know, there are states, I believe Louisiana just did, that they will not go along with any plans from the UN. I think the WHO was included in that as well. I'd have to look at it. You know, I don't remember, but definitely the UN. So I think we need to, you know, recognize that we can do things locally, where we do not have to go along with their plans, and that we should, you know, whatever we can do to create bulwarks against the tyrannical measures we need to do, because they want to install human 2.0. They talk about, you know, it's not just transhumanism. They talk about a post-human society, and that is a very real thing. There is a, you know, there is a philosophy of post-humanism, and, it, you know, you can go watch the World Economic Forum symposiums, and people like Yuval Noah Harari and Klaus Schwab, they talk about it, but there's manuals. I thought there was only one, but apparently there's several handbooks on post-humanism. And so they're really hoping that they're going to get us into this transhuman, which is merging man with machine, and then we will have a post-human society where it's really, they talk about the AI world society where, you know, humans will be objects. And there will be no human-run governments. It will all be run by AI. And there will be AI citizens. So they're really creating. You'll have a digital twin. So this is, in my opinion, it's very, very scary. And it's the end of humanity as we know it. And, you know, if we can do anything to preserve humanity 1.0, then I think we should. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And I want to touch on the couple of really important points that you made. The first is with the Louisiana bill, and it was just up on the screen. This is a really solid and important strategy for what Susie and I call our defensive strategy. And so a really important piece here is that technically the WHO and the UN, even though they talk about binding and non-binding agreements, they're very crafty with their language, we know. And we call the pandemic the pandemic treaty, but they've went back and forth with it being an accord and a treaty and a this and a that, because all of these words have specific legal ramifications. Yeah. When it is an international treaty, it must be ratified by 2/3 of our Senate vote, according to our Constitution. That our executive branch for many years has laid a precedence where the president could kind of just sign it in. And that is pretty dangerous because Biden will likely sign this in. However, that just because there's a precedence doesn't mean it's legal. And what our Constitution does say is that our states can protect from international treaties that have not been ratified. And so I encourage anybody in any state, and the place to go is thedoortofreedom.org or .com. I don't know if it's .org or .com. Susie will pull it up really fast. There is a state tab with all of the states that have passed either county level resolutions. So in my county, in South Carolina, we just passed a local resolution from our local GOP, and then we will go to the state level to put it as part of the state platform. That's one option. The next option is getting actually, like Louisiana, a bill passed that protects. That's the best option. Or to work with your federal representatives to actually exit the WHO and get us out. So there is a lot of legislative work that could be done by activists and at the grassroots level. We often feel powerless when it comes to these international entities because it's such a huge elephant to bear. But we have to remember that we do have a constitution. We have a phenomenal constitution that protects us, and we could.
I would argue the best in the world, but
use the best. We could use it, and so, so ensuring that we pass these resolutions, and with the timeline, resolutions are probably the way to go, depending on what state you live in and your legislative season. So that's option number one, and that's the defensive strategy, and we all know that defense wins games. But Susie and I and the Inspired Network are all about, it's time for us to score some goals. And yes, we could stop them, we could slow them. But if the world that they're, so they have those sustainable development goals, the UN, and this is what they're creating, and they sound beautiful, right? So where does the problem come in? The problem comes in is the mechanisms through which they are using to define what that means. What does well-being mean to them, and what does it mean to us? What does information sharing mean to them, and what does it mean to us? Those are different things. The operationalization or the definition of how they're using these terms matters. Child health to us means probably a child who is happy and healthy and well-balanced and well-adjusted and resilient to, you know, things that happen in their environment. To them, it means a well-vaccinated child who is compliant and follows the rules of society. Those are totally different. And so when...
Who's a global citizen.
As a global citizen with equity, right? And so these are words they use that sound sexy, but they're defined in drastically different ways. And when they're defined in drastically different ways, the implementation strategies and the mechanisms they use to get there, that's where the danger happens. And then you add to it that they have these private-public partnerships that sound so beautiful, but what do they mean? They mean that our governments are ruling on things that bring huge financial and other gains to private organizations that creates this cycle of influence. And it becomes exhausting, and we are wiping out in terms of defense. And that is why we need to come together in an offensive strategy. You showed on the screen a couple minutes ago all of this money that Zuckerberg is pouring into research. And it feels overwhelming when you think about the level of money and power that they have.
Yep.
And when you think about the 8 billion people of the world, it becomes a little bit easier to bear, because intuitively, it doesn't matter how much money they have. It doesn't matter how much power they have when the 8 billion people unite and say, we no longer give you that power. We have implicitly allowed them to control us. I agree with you, Courtney, that technology is not a bad thing. I mean, Susie and I connect. We live on other sides of the country. If it wasn't for our phones, I don't think I would exist. I call her at least 30 times a day. I mean, technology is not a bad thing. It's their use of technology that's a bad thing. But when 8 billion people of the world come together, we no longer have to be reliant on their technology.
Right.
Mark Zuckerberg only has so much money because we're all on Meta. What if we had an alternative to Meta? What if we had another healthcare system that wasn't pharmaceutically bought? What if we had education systems that didn't indoctrinate children into lack of contentment in life. What if we had a better economy where mothers didn't have to feel like they had to choose between staying home with their children or having a job and contributing to society?
Right.
We can have a better world. We have just been taught that we have to be reliant on the systems. We have been taught that the systems we have now are stable and static. And the truth is they're not. They have grown, they have developed, they have evolved, and they have changed to get to where they are now. And it is not too late for us to create an alternative reality. It is not too late for us to come together and use the same methods, right? The same strategies, setting goals, measuring outcomes, implementing things in a coordinated way. If we want a healthcare system that serves us, we might need to first build software platforms. If we want to keep information, we might need an alternative way to communicate online, alternative social media. We might need to do the heavy lifting and the heavy work, but it's possible. And when 8 billion people bring their funds together, when even $5, $10, I mean, you're talking about your road to Geneva. If everyone watching the show just sent you $5, you could probably get there, right?
Totally.
It is just everybody doing a little thing and we could get there. And this is the purpose of the Geneva Project. At the Geneva Project, we will be hosting a major historic rally. We have people coming from all over the world sharing in their road to Geneva. Our road to Geneva represents the ending of this battle that we just won. Our war is not over, but that battle has been won. So we're doing our final victory lap with a citizens convoy. Started as a trucker's convoy and then a farmer's convoy and then a citizens convoy because more and more excitement and more momentum kept building. We need to celebrate the freedom that we have and celebrate the freedoms that we earned by fighting back against their mandates. And then it is time to declare our independence. Their votes on the IHR amendments and the pandemic treaty can be obsolete if we do not pay them any heed. It's like just ignore your abuser and move out of the house and they can't abuse you anymore. We are saying no more. And of course, that's not going to happen overnight. Of course, that sounds idealistic. But at some point, we need to put our foot down and say today is the day that the world changes. And June 1st is that day. June 1st is the day where we, the 8 billion people of the world, unite. Whether you could get to Geneva or not, you can be part of this. Because this is the day that we're choosing. The last day of their World Health Assembly Week marks the first day of the rest of our world. Because this is the day we commit to saying, this is our opening ceremony. This is the day that the rest of the world changes. And we will be having a summit behind the scenes where we're bringing people like yourself, Courtney, together to figure out how we are defining health, how we are defining a healthcare system, how we are breaking the barriers that have kept us stuck so we could begin to define and build a healthcare system. It is a long-term game, but I don't know about you, but I am doing this for future generations. I will do it until my last breath. And so no complex problem is solved with a simple solution. No world changes overnight. We didn't get here overnight. Nope. And now is the time to say we're going to start our world. We are no longer giving them any energy. Stop giving energy to that which we do not want and start placing our energy in that which we do want. Keep up the fight. Keep up the warriors. Don't let your guard down. But also place some into the future and into a better world for our children.
I feel like that could have been your rally speech.
I know.
I know.
You got to play that at the rally stage.
I'm going to try to interject and just say, you know, a lot of people came into this during COVID and during COVID pandemic. And like, this is fight or flight. They didn't know how to stand up and fight back. They saw this as the first time that the corporate captured regulatory bodies were coming in and mandating something on people. But if you look at history, that's not the case. I mean, over 100 years ago, the Rockefellers took over our medical system. There's a great documentary out there called From Healthcare to Sick Care, where the Rockefellers go in, they reimagine our medical system. They're the ones that do all the accredited medical schools that you have to go to become a doctor. They're the ones that wiped out all the home homeopathic pharmacies, traditional Chinese medicine, everything out of this country that actually brought us back into balance, into homeostasis to make us healthy, and then right into sickness with a pill for every ill and then a pill for every ill that the pill causes. And it's just been that going on for forever. So I think people that just got involved during the COVID pandemic really need to step back and see there is hope and there is a way forward, that this is not something that they just vomited on us, but this has been a long-term plan. And that's why when Andrea and I do these, you know, events or a rally or a summit or a march or whatever it is, it's not a one and done thing, because the globalists weren't one and done. They're hundreds of years in the making. And so we're doing this, but this is our second summit. We have further that are being planned down the road in September. We have one in DC. We're going to keep going, because we understand with all of these industrial complexes that we need to address and create that world that we want to see. So when we talk about reimagining a healthcare system, it's about having access to organic foods and understanding how to do regenerative farming. It's about foundations of
health. And what that really means, not what the UN is pushing. I mean, I've done so much on the NACs, and they talk about regenerative, and they've totally redefined the term. So
yeah,
very deceptive.
And if you guys don't know Howard Vlieger, definitely look him up. He works with Contact Organics, but he has been a key player behind the scenes in so many organizations that are actually doing the work. He's fantastic. He's part of our network as well. We have so much love and admiration for Howard, if you're watching. Hi. but he really will explain what regenerative means. He lives on a multi-generational family farm, so he walks the talk, and he's the only person that I buy meat from. He ships it to me from Iowa because he's so fantastic. Yeah. So awesome. he's a wonderful resource, but it's very important for people that just got involved, like I said, to understand that this is a long-term battle. You know, we are not going to win everything overnight, but we do have to get the courage to come together like we are, to empower each other, to stand up, to say no. They have our freedoms because we gave it away, because we didn't have the support. We didn't understand the plan. We didn't have that 30,000 foot view. But now we're gaining that more and more. And that's why the Inspired Network is so incredible, because we have people from the farming, we have people from the agricultural space. We have people that are politicians, doctors, scientists, parents, homeschool teachers. I mean, on and on and on and on, because we understand that we really do have to create in all of these different spaces what we want, instead of just fighting back those IHR amendments. We have to really work to create the world for our future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I just did a show not too long ago on the Rockefeller takeover of medicine. And, you know, you were saying how, I mean, we know the Flexner Report was 1910. So, I mean, this has been definitely in the works for a long time. And it started a little bit before that. But they actually even started a school in China. You were talking about Chinese medicine. And they tried to export the whole system through China. It turned out to be too expensive. And they like canned the whole project. Yeah. Wow. I know, but it was very successful in the United States. And I think, you know, they really do attack the United States, I think, more than other. They've been a lot more successful around the world. So, you know, certainly we're seeing people really rise up. But I think they're the people who are rising up, we're seeing it with the farmers, with truckers in Canada. But part of it is because their backs are against the wall. They're so far ahead of us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and that's not, you know, to discredit the people who are standing up and who have the courage, but, you know, desperate people do desperate things. And I think they're at the point where it's like they have so little to lose that they really are stepping up. And, you know, again, this is not to, derogatory to anybody anywhere else in the world. People are doing wonderful things. And I'm so glad that they are standing up. But I think people in America need to understand that our Constitution is very unique. And, you know, we are the only place that has a document that stipulates that we have inalienable rights that were endowed by our creator, that they are not given by the government. Mm-hmm. And that is something that needs to be taken very seriously, regardless of your worldview. I don't care what religion, you know, what you subscribe to. That is your personal belief. The First Amendment protects that, and it protects your right to have that and to voice that. However, our documents do, the Bill of Rights do say that our rights are given by, are endowed by our creator. They are inalienable. And we need to really preserve that. We need to honor that and understand that that's what they're really attacking. They're trying to say that no, that they give us our rights, that they decide what well-being means and how we're going to achieve it, that they decide what health means and how we're going to achieve it. And as we've seen over the past few years, you know, I think that in some ways it really was a blessing, because I know for myself, I always say, I was totally asleep and I thought I was so awake, but, you know, hindsight's 20/20, pun intended, you know. So I always make the joke that, like, it took me forever to find the train station. Then I found the high speed rail and now I'm just scrambling to try and catch up. So I'm voraciously trying to absorb as much information as I possibly can. And then I'm constantly horrified by what I learn. You are right. These people have they have a long range vision, mm-hmm. and they build the plans. They're very patient. You know, the Fabian socialists, their model was incrementalism, and their mascot was the tortoise for this reason. The slow and steady wins the race, right? Their coat of arms, of course, was the wolf in sheep's clothing, which I think was a nod to the Hegelian dialectic that they weaponized. You know, I think you had talked about before that the left-right is a false construct that they use in order to pit us against each other. So that they can march on with their agenda, because if you divide and conquer, it's much easier to, you know, use the chaos as a breeding ground for usurpation of power. And we need to stay united. I really think that, you know, right now there's so much division. It's just really sickening to watch how effective they are at dividing everyone. And I'm not saying people need to agree on everything. Stand by your convictions. Yeah. But I think the one thing that we should be able to unite on is personal sovereignty, yes. and really to preserve free will. And that's what they want to eradicate. And so, yeah, we need to stand together in that, and we need to create a vision that leads us towards that. We need to understand, you know, what that looks like. I think that our education system was so effective in indoctrinating people. The purpose was to breed compliance. And they literally said that, you know, the Prussian model, the Hegelian Prussian model of education really took hold after the Battle of Jena. They lost the battle. It was during the Napoleonic Wars in 1807. And they lost the battle because the soldiers rebelled. And they realized they rebelled because they were critical thinking. And so they decided they had to eviscerate critical thinkers. And so obviously it was not in English, but the translation was that they were going to build a education system that bred mindless, obedient soldiers. And that's really what has been exported to the United States through the field of social science that had a huge impact on, you know, the Americanization of Wundt, Wilhelm Wundt, the psychologist. He was the first person to call himself a psychologist. And he, you know, through his PhD program, he had a huge influence on John Dewey's mentor, who was G. Stanley Hall, right? Granville Stanley Hall. And he really did create this compliance system that does take away any ability. I mean, even just the part of why most people are so illiterate is because they've stripped, you know, phonics and introduced things like the look-see method, which were wonderful for the deaf community. You know, Gallaudet adopted this, it was the mother's primer, the look-see method. And that is great for people who, who don't have the auditory processing, but for people who do, phonics, it allows them to be able to break it down into small units and to use their, problem-solving skills to work things through. And that's what we need. And we need to go back to, you know, just to bring up the Rockefeller takeover, you know, go back to what did it look like before? We look at, I think it's Eustace Mullins, and he talks about, he wrote a great book, he's written several, but Murder by Injection is one of them. And he talks about the Rockefeller takeover of medicine. And he says how, I mean, people for millennia were actually quite healthy using more natural homeopathy. Chinese medicine is thousands of years old. And this is not to say that there hasn't been miracles created by allopathic medicine. I'm not one of those people who wants to, you know, throw it out completely or say that there's no value in it. I think that for acute medicine, for trauma, and even for some, you know, except for some things, it really that can be more chronic. There's great power. And we live in an age where we have some incredible advanced technology, advanced medical knowledge. And why not bring a hybrid of the two? why wouldn't we incorporate and utilize the best of all that we have accrued to witness a time such as this, you know, where we have humanity has a, you know, suffered so much, learned so much, and we don't need to repeat all of the mistakes that they've made. Let's learn from them, you know, the great teachings that they've given us, that should be the blessing, and we should be able to utilize it and hopefully envision something moving forward that is for the flourishing, true flourishing of humanity. Of 1.0.
You said envision, Andrea. I think that's your key point. That's a key word.
Pardon? No, absolutely. And what I want to pick up on is so first of all, yes, you're absolutely right. And what, you know, what they do is when you start talking about, this is just yet another example of division, right? We all know the division they create between black and white and blue and red. But you start saying, I want to first go to the chiropractor or practice Chinese medicine to prevent something, or I want to eat organic food. And they say, what do you want to take away our entire emergency care system? It's a way to divide. It's a way to take away what we know. And I want to emphasize that the problem is not with the individual doctors many times. The doctors only know the system that they're trained. They're people who go in trying to help. It's our system that has been broken. It's our system that has trained that there's one way for medicine. There's a system that has trained the expert knows everything and the mother knows nothing. Right. So what, and I want to pick up on what you said about they've been in this for a long time. And they're using social science, behavioral science, health science. They're using what we know about obedience, education, and human behavior to drive what they're doing. Our movement, and Susie and I, Susie more than anybody I know, has been in this legislative fight forever. She is the most effective activist, I think, that has ever existed. And she'll push back at me for that. But maybe I'm biased, but she truly knows about activism. No one is saying give up the fight. What we're saying is we can do better. If you think about a football game, right? After the game, they might win, they might lose. And what's the first thing they do the next day at practice in the locker room? They watch the tapes. They watch what they did. You could do this better. You could do that better. We could improve this play. We could improve that play. Our movement has not stopped and watched the tapes. We just keep going, thinking if we work harder and harder and harder and get louder and louder and louder, we'll somehow magically win. We'll somehow magically hit that fairy dust that falls down from the sky and success will be ours. But that is not how social change happens. There's an actual entire scientific literature on how social change happens, and it tells us we could do things better. And you know who's reading that literature? Our opposition. And you know what they're doing? They're implementing it and they're doing it better. They had development goals in 2000. You know what happened? They didn't reach them. They were terrible at them. So you know what they did? They watched the tapes, so to speak. They did 2 years of an inclusive input process, and then they came up with the sustainable development goals. They are constantly learning. They're implementing what we know. We are not doing that. We're working in silos and we're fighting. It's time to keep doing that, but it's time to start coming together. We could work harder and we could work smarter. We could connect better. We could use what we know. We could share each other's expertise, right? I don't need to know everything about activism because as soon as I have a question, I pick up the phone and call Susie, right? Because she doesn't need to know everything about statistics because she has a statistics question. I can answer it. And we need to do that across the movement. Everybody doesn't have to be the quarterback. We need a quarterback, we need a backup quarterback, and we need an entire team to pull this to action. And that entire team, going back to what you said before, Courtney, includes every citizen on earth. You don't have to be on a podcast or in Geneva or standing on stage or have a million followers to make a difference in the world. You know what you could do? Buy organic foods for your child. Support your local farmer. You could write to your local county council if you're not even comfortable enough to write to your senators or your reps. Do what's comfortable for you. Do connect with a neighbor. Eat dinner as a family at a table.
Yes.
Like the simple things. Ask your grandparents what they did when they had a cold if you don't want to take an antibiotic. Talk to a midwife about birthing. Like the fight doesn't always have to be sexy and hard. The fight mm-hmm. happens by creating a world together and by leadership, those who do want to be loud, those who do want to stand up, those who do have that platform to do so, let's start coming together to do so in a coordinated way. It doesn't mean more work. It means more communication.
Yeah, that is so true. I just wanted to address what you're talking about, the social change, right? That's that this is the social scientist and comes out of really out of Tavistock. But I have the National Training Labs who are partners with the NEA. So they're partners with our education system. And this is a handbook on organizational development and change. They've literally created the, you know, blueprint for change agents. Yeah. This is, of course, out of Lewin, who is an agent for the OSS, and he created all of the wartime selection boards. So that they, and that this is part of what they use in order to create change agents. And this is another one. It's organizational development and strategy model. But I think you're so right. We should read these things and we should understand how to use them for good. Because it's really the technology is just the tool. Right. And by technology, I mean, you know, language is a technology. So yeah. We should really be coming together and figure out how are they doing this and how can we do this to be a force for good and for the freedom of humanity? Because, you know, humans make good choices when they have good information mm-hmm. and we have intentionally been deprived. You know, that's what occultism is about. It's a, you know, withholding the information. That's what the, you know, the esoteric, it's not so much about, you know, yes, there's dark magic and all of that. That's the very sexy part of it. And by sexy, I don't mean like, you know, in a positive way, but that's what people are very drawn to. But what they forget is just that things that are powerful are often withheld from the masses. And they're withheld from the masses because they don't want us to empower ourselves. And I love what you're saying, that it doesn't have to be a big showy fight. You know, everybody has a sphere of influence. That could be their children. It could be their parents. It could be, you know, starting with them, be the change you want to see, as cliche as that is. And they often weaponize that slogan, you know, to mean, you know, it's a communist agitprop. But really, there's so much truth in that, because what oftentimes we don't have control and power over things outside of ourselves, but we can start with our own behaviors, our own reactions, and our own communities, our own families. And there really is a lot of power in that, because there's such a ripple effect. So I think a lot of it does start with information. People need to know. A lot of people have no idea what's going on. And that is one of the, you know, real gifts and blessings I'm seeing, is that so many more people are waking up. Even if they don't have all the details, they're starting to see something's not quite right. They've been lied to about a lot of things. They may be fuzzy on the details, but at least they know that maybe they've been lied to. And that's the first step to people asking questions. And, you know, once you ask enough questions, it can open a lot of doors. So
absolutely.
That's part of creating that network too, because what was happening, especially during COVID time, is right before COVID, they created the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And so I would post stuff on Twitter, on Facebook or Instagram that was talking about foundations of health or like generational knowledge. And it was like very low key, you know, talking about your immune system. I'm a holistic mm-hmm. health coach. I work with a lot of vaccine injured mm-hmm. people. So like getting your body back into balance. And mm-hmm. I was getting flagged for this all the time. And they actually, in some of their articles, they had screenshots of my posts saying that what I was saying was hateful. And all I was talking about was how to be healthy. Like it made absolutely zero sense. Yeah, that's what it was. And then they were working. So I was looking at the ties. And back in 2007, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funded the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation here out of the University of Washington, where I live. And it was the same kind of thing. And then when COVID hit the scene, it's 2+ million people, according to them, are going to die. And it's fear, fear, fear. You can't have the knowledge about how to create. There's no hope. There's no positivity. There's no community. Just be scared. Stay home. You know, don't kill grandma. It's like, but we are the counter to that. The Inspired Network and the Geneva Project is the counter to that. And when I say the Inspired Network, again, it's not just Andrea and I. It's every single person that wants to come work with us, because we work more as a backbone organization. We support everybody. We help. Andrea's got an incredible background, academic background, where she understands these systems and how to actually implement what people want to create and how they want to get to their end goals, and can help them get there. So that's the whole point, is bringing everybody not into a centralized system, but under that backbone where we can support you, give you more strength, and then you go out and do your own thing. Dan Astin Gregory is running the Road to Geneva, the Citizens Convoy. Shaz Khan and Philip Cruz are doing a press conference and the heads of the rally with Maria Habermog. You know, myself and Andrea are doing the Inspired Summit. It's like, but there's all of these points, but we're all part of the same network now.
I love it. That's, yeah, it's incredible. Do you have anything else you want to add? Like, how can people get involved? How can people learn more?
So we encourage folks, we encourage anyone who wants to come to Geneva to make the road to Geneva yourself. If it's not feasible to come to Geneva, we encourage folks to, we will be walking. We'll be doing a march to the future. So we encourage anybody at the same time. So we are marching at 4:30 Geneva time. So whatever time that corresponds to your time zone, we encourage you to go out and walk with us and take pictures, take video, and share your road to Geneva. What's your road to Geneva? It's your story to freedom. It's your path. It's what brought you there, because we are spending time to honor how we've all come together. There is something magical about remembering and honoring our individual stories. They want, Courtney, before you mentioned how we've been taught, you know, to be helpless. And part of the way they do that is by making us all the same, but we're not all the same. And our cultures matter. Our stories matter. So we encourage everybody to go on social media, encourage other folks to share their road to Geneva, and to begin to celebrate not that we were victims since 2020 and beforehand, but to flip the narrative and be proud of all that we overcame and we're still standing today. The future is positive because we've already demonstrated our strength. And of course, what we're doing right now and what we're doing in the years ahead, the decades ahead with the Inspired Network is impactful and important work, but it's completely self-funded right now. So if you have any money to share, any financial support to share, or any resources that you think you could really come to our network and contribute, we would absolutely appreciate even a small amount gets us a little bit further. So you could go to our website, theinspirednetwork.org/pledge, and pledge anything that you feel would contribute to our project, because this really is a global effort. You know, we could come on a podcast and we could talk about what we're doing, but the only way these ideas translate to action is if we could awaken the masses and awaken the global community. There's a need to flip the script or redefine what an influencer is. And I believe that the strongest influencers we have in this world are the moms who meet at a mom's group and begin to talk about their child. Hairdressers, bartenders are probably the most influential people on earth because you have contact with people. So begin to share these ideas. It doesn't have to be attached to Susie and I, my name. It doesn't even have to be attached to the Inspired Network because it's not about us. It's about our world and the future generations. So talk about it. Don't be afraid to talk about the positive. People are afraid to talk about the fight because not everyone wants to fight. But begin to talk about what the world you want to see. Begin to talk about freedom. Begin to talk about sovereignty and normalize that it's okay to have differences of opinion. It's not about agreeing. It's about loving and respecting each other in similar spaces. It's about honoring each other's journeys and coming together with hope for a joint future. So please join us in the conversation. Join us in Geneva. If you can't make Geneva, join us for a walk, and please help us with any financial support that you can, because we hope to keep this project alive for our entire lifetime.
So beautiful. Absolutely. I do want to ask, what are your thoughts about the outcomes? Like, do you think that there is chance that we can stop them, you know, in Geneva? Do you think that, if we don't stop them, what do you think will happen? Yeah.
I think that our purpose with Geneva is not to stop them, because our purpose is to make them obsolete. So that's why we're going there. That being said, there are incredible people I will call out the Door to Freedom again as a leading organization. The Global Health Project is a project that I'm a founding board member to, as well as the Sovereignty Coalition. There are such amazing, brilliant people. I just lay my head on my pillow at night feeling so blessed to be connected to and friends with people who are so brave and so brilliant. And there is amazing work being done to stop the WHO. I think that we have a chance of slowing them down. They're behind, period. They're supposed to give 4 months for public review and all this stuff, and they're behind. So there's a possibility that they won't vote in May. But there's also the clear knowledge that they are going to do what they want to do, and it doesn't matter if there's rules and policies that they follow. And my approach is not to get lost in the web of their corruption, because that bogs me down and makes me feel powerless. So when I just push it aside and say, I don't care when they vote on it, even if they don't vote on this, the next thing they're going to do is corrupt, and they're still going to try to do the power grab. So it's a little bit less about this treaty and this amendment, because in a few years, they're going to have another thing. And until we step up and create what we want, we're always just going to be a dog chasing their tail, trying to stop the next thing. There's always going to be a next thing, because they are on a hedonistic treadmill of rewards and self-gain. We need to kick them off that and just join a different gym.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Susie? Anything else you want to say?
Like Andrea was saying, we are doing the foundational work, definitely working legislatively here, making sure that we're partnering with other organizations. I put a couple of them in the chat here. And helping other people to use their voice in what ways they can. And a lot of those people, it's just writing letters to their elected officials. Others are having actual legislative meetings. I've been facilitating on that side of it, because it is important to also do the groundwork. But what Andrea is emphasizing is that when we go to Geneva, it's not with the spirit of fighting. It's with the spirit of coming together and healing and becoming stronger in our sovereignty. And so it's a multifaceted thing, but that's what we do with Inspired Network. And we're going to keep hitting every angle that we can within the organizations that we connect to. And the more people we can connect to, the more effective we'll be. And that's why we hope that people reach out to us and we can keep on this path together, because Andrea's correct. We will be doing this until we die, because we want to make sure that we leave the world a better place for our children and for the many generations to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is so, so incredibly needed. I'm so grateful to both of you for doing this and to everybody who's involved. I love that, really it's multi-pronged. It's the defensive tactic, which of course we need. But, I talk about this all the time, is people are so, I think, especially in, quote unquote, our side, but, in the freedom space, in the many, many factions that there are of it. But people talk a lot about these parallel systems. And I'm all for creating parallel systems, but I think the problem is a lot of times people just want to abandon the current system and build a new system, but without a bridge. And, that's not very realistic. It's not very feasible. So I love that this is still taking a defensive approach, where we have to fight the system that is currently in place and to build another system to make them obsolete, so they are no longer an option or no longer a desired or even a, because a lot of people, it's not that they want it, it's that they feel coerced and compelled and they feel like there is nothing else. But, if there isn't anything else in place, then you're left with chaos. And I think people really underestimate what that will look like. A lot of times people really advocate for it without really thinking through what that could really mean. And oftentimes, chaos is really just the breeding ground for usurpation of power. And they will just march right in with their quote unquote solution and take, seize the control and place the order that they want to see, the new world order, if you will, the new order. That's what they want. So I love that this is really, we fight this system, because this system is not, beneficial to the future of humanity. That's really literally, they want to end humanity as we know it. It's humanity 2.0. That's what they say. And we should really take their word, they tell us what they want and what their plans are. So we should take it pretty seriously. And then simultaneously to build the vision for what do we want? and what do we see for a future? And that may not look the same for all 8 billion people, but I think between all of us, I think we can certainly come up with something that is much better than it will at least be with the visions of the individuals in mind, as opposed to a small collective crime syndicate who wants to enslave all of us. So so I think that's a better option for sure.
I agree with you. And that's really something that we focus on too, is honoring the cultural differences that we have. We don't want to be homogenized. We want to honor the fact that, you know, my son's father has a lot of Native American in him, and they have different cultural differences. And we want to support that and continue to, we don't just want to give you a piece of land in one area and, you know, do whatever we tell you. We don't want to take over. We don't want to tell you who to worship. We don't want to tell you how to eat or what drug model or, you know, whatever it is. Like, that's not what we are trying to do. We want everyone to be able to embrace back to their roots, their cultural knowledge, that cultural wisdom that's been there for generations, and be able to really celebrate that. And that's something that we should be doing. I mean, I'm an island girl. I live on a little island that's ferry access only. I'm neurotic about showing up at least 10 minutes to every meeting, because if you don't show up early to the ferry boat, you're stuck on the island for the next hour and a half. And Andrea likes to show up 5 minutes late to every meeting. We embrace each other's small differences.
Yeah, I will probably be late to my funeral, so I love that. But, for sure. No, but that's such a really good point. You know, they are really trying to wipe out the differences, because it is easier to control people if they convince us that we are all, that this is why that they use the term global citizen. And that's really what they're trying to create, where they're, you know, and this is the, you know, I'm going to be doing a show on this, but it's the theosophical roots of the, where they're going, because that's where they incorporate all the religions, and they keep saying they want to bring a one world religion. Mm-hmm. And if you just look at the UN, their spiritual consultancy is the Lucius Trust, right? Mm-hmm. This is Alice Bailey, who's a disciple of Madame Blavatsky. It was Lucifer Publishing. So, I mean, we could just say what it is. This is Luciferian. And you don't have to be a Christian to acknowledge that. I mean, the name was Lucifer Publishing, right. You know, and you read Madame Blavatsky's writings, and she talks about how Lucifer is the only God, and he's God of Earth, and, you know, she worships him. And that is what they're trying to, but they do it under the guise of being tolerant and accepting. Mm-hmm. And when you read the, not just the Theosophist with the capital T, but if you read even some of the earlier theosophical influences that come out of India or the Neoplatonists or even the ancient Egyptian mystery, they are very inclusive. And the reason they're inclusive is because they want to put you in, they want to blur all boundaries. So it is all one. There is no individuality. There is no separation. It is all one. And therefore our voice doesn't matter, and our individuality doesn't matter. And that if that's true, then, you know, it denies us of any of the beautiful, unique gifts and talents and purpose that each and every human being brings to the world. And then they have complete control, because if none of us matter, then, you know, we just all divert to whatever the one, you know, is. And right now it looks like that one is going to be a cyber Satan. That's kind of what it looks like to me. So,
and that is where we got much of the imagery we use for the Geneva Project, of the Geneva being dark and black. Mm-hmm. And we visualize, because largely what the freedom movement, you know, I'll just do a cry to action, is we really need to integrate the arts back in and bring, you know, we have some amazing musicians that have emerged representing this, but freedom and what we're doing here, this inspiration, this hope for the future, Cosfest, yep, it comes viscerally. It doesn't, you know, I'm a huge nerd. I'm a big data nerd. I read the research. I'm like, I'm all academic'd out, but really change doesn't happen here. It happens here. And so we need to take hold of musicians that are emerging. We need to bring this in, and we need to embrace them the same way we embrace Hollywood, because Hollywood is going out and the people you see on the screen now are the people coming in, because this is, if this is the world we want, let's listen to the people who are bringing our spirits alive, not making us dull and, you know, some other words. But really how we envision the Geneva Project visually, because it truly is a visceral experience, not an academic experience. It's flooding Geneva with color. Why are we going there on that day? It would be a heck of a lot easier to do this rally any place else in the world
than
Geneva. It would be a lot cheaper too, because trust me, the prices of Geneva when the global elites are in town are only described as extortion.
They're elite prices.
But, you know, we're going in because we need to do this spiritual clashing of ideologies. We need to flood. If they have a vacuum of black and white, we need to flood it with color again, because the color represents our individuality. And it is the beauty of the world. Disagreements, contentious conversations. They taught us to not talk about politics and religion over the dinner table because they don't want us to learn how to talk about difficult conversations. Yeah. And what is our society doing right now? Bowing down to difficult conversations. And so we need to celebrate our differences. We need to accept that if we disagree with each other, we could still love each other. We could have differences of opinion and push each other forward through our differences, because the only way an idea gets better is when someone disagrees with it and you go back and forth and then make it better, because that's how we advance. And so within our movement and our society at large, we need to bring the color back. We need to bring this idea that we can be different, share different perspectives, share different experiences. And that is how we create a better future. It's not by making us all the same and listening to thou at the top.
Yeah, exactly. And what you said about art, obviously, you know, something I'm super passionate about. Yeah, we did the Cause Fest, and that was creative artists uniting for the sovereignty of everyone. And I do think Hollywood is very much dying, and I think they know it. I think that's why they are, you know, they call it revelation of the method, but I think they're really showing their hand. It's pretty hard to deny how degenerate and how openly satanic so much of it is at this point. And, you know, again, the part of the reason I did Cause Vest, and we are fundraising to do another one, is for the same reason you were saying, is that we keep arguing what we're against, but very rarely do we show what we're for. And that was really important to me, to show that there could be good, clean fun, that there is another avenue, there's another potential. You know, and that there are people who have divergent, independent views. And a lot of the people at Cause Fest did not have similar views. You know, actually, it was a very diverse crowd. But the one thing that we all united on is our passion for creativity and personal sovereignty. And I think if you can't unite on those two things, humanity has no hope at all, you know, because we are creative beings, you know, and if you do have a biblical worldview, we are made in the image of the creator, and therefore we are creative beings. And I think part of the way that we, you know, emanate that is through art. And that, you know, that's our creative, that's one of our creative processes. And I think it is so important because, as you said, art is visceral. And, you know, when we debate ideas, and I'm very much a, you know, an ideas person, you know, I love ideas and I love research and, you know, I'm very passionate about that. But when we debate ideas, it's logical. We appeal to the reason and we can separate ourselves. So we can really, you know, reason our way through things that may really actually be against what our gut is telling us and what our heart is speaking. And when things hit us emotionally, we don't know how, why. We can't explain it, but we can't deny it either. And I think that is why Hollywood has been so effective at, you know, brainwashing, indoctrinating, is because it is done through these catchy beats and through, you know, very the visual mediums and all of these creative mediums that they have the power to affect us on a cellular level. And so we respond to it and we don't realize how much of those messages we may have that may have been inculcated as a result. So it's important for us to, you know, put our voices through a creative medium and embrace real art that is not, you know, part of a social engineering product project, rather. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And absolutely also to celebrate the differences, because what you were saying about how, you know, they don't want us to have the difficult conversations so that we just kowtow. And I think part of it, one of the things people need to understand is it's not about kowtowing. I want people to stand by their convictions, you know, to have courage in their convictions, whether that be their religious beliefs, their political beliefs, their you know, really whatever intellectual pursuits that they feel impassioned. But when you engage in debate, then you either are forced to reinforce the holes in your argument or to examine those holes and maybe rethink your stance. And both of those, I think, are very, very healthy. We're not always right. We don't have all the information. When new evidence is brought forth, we should be able to examine it. We should be able to say, oh, I didn't know that, and now I rethink my whole position. And the, you know, the same goes for, we should be able to say, I feel really strongly about this. I may not have all the facts. I'm going to collect more data. And as I collect more data, maybe it reinforces what I believe, but now I can make a more cogent argument. And I think both of those should be within our scope and what we strive for. So, and I think that they do advance humanity, you know, if we are able to do that. So
absolutely. I think that whole right versus wrong dichotomy is just part of the division that they've created to keep us fighting. When we accept that there is neither, in many cases, there's neither right versus wrong, there are situations and people for whom something may be right, and situations and scenarios for other people for whom it might be wrong. And we really live in a world of continual knowledge gain. So something that might be right now might be wrong in the future. Something wrong now might be right in the future. And it's only through intellectual discourse that we're able to expand and grow, then we could let go of the right versus wrong dichotomy and get into the standing in the truth a little bit more and knowledge acquisition. Going back to the arts comment, I just wanted to add one piece to it, is that I also believe that the arts are our best mechanism for engaging the youth. This social movement is an interesting one, because typically the youth are drive social movements. And I was actually speaking to somebody the other day where we were talking about, you know, the 60s and Woodstock and talking about how the youth really came alive and drove that. And they said, yeah, but you know what? The adults started it in the 50s, which gave me a little bit of hope, right? Going back to right versus wrong, I was wrong. And then, you know, it was illuminating. That gave me a little bit of hope. Like maybe we're just in the 50s and the adults are driving it and then the youth will pick it up. But at some point, we need to capture the youth voice. We need to empower the youth, help create settings so youth feel empowered, so that this goes on for generations. Because really, the world we're creating is not for us. And the world that we grew up in doesn't exist anymore. So unless we're aligning with the youth and creating a world that the youth, based on the world we gave them, that it works for them, then we're missing the mark. And the arts, I think, are our best mechanism to do that, because they don't care about data points and theory. They care about, you know, sex, drug, and rock and roll.
So I will address two points there. One is that in terms of right and wrong, I absolutely think that I believe there is absolute truth. I don't believe we're always privy to it.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, being able to, I think as humans, we get very attached to we're right and somebody else is
wrong. Attachment is what I was referring to.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to clarify that.
No, that's perfect.
Because it's the otherizing, right? It's the same strategy of otherizing. The other thing I wanted to address is when you talk about capturing the youth, I think that is incredibly important. I think a lot of people don't recognize that most culture is not organic. You know, I think in a microcosm, there can be organic culture. And I'm not saying that nothing has ever been organic in history. That's not true, obviously. You know, we can point to, you know, everybody knows somebody that they can point to disprove that. However, most mass scale culture, like the 60s counterculture movement, was a top down movement. You know, it was socially engineered. It was culture creation. It was done through an intelligence network apparatus. And, you know, we have countless evidence to prove that. And so you know, I don't say that to squash any hope of capturing the youth. What I say that just to show that if culture is created and, you know, we know how they've socially engineered the masses, I'm not advocating that we mind control or brainwash anyone, but we can use some of those for positive. I think we can use some of the tactics that, you know, in very simple ways, just like creating art independently, and art that is not pedantic, because I think oftentimes what I see from people who are on, you know, the you know, independent, freedom, whatever category, I hate all the labels, because someone, you know, I think I did a tweet not too long ago where I said that oftentimes people think about the political labels as being ideological references. And I'm not saying that they don't have philosophical roots, but more often than not, what I see in practice is their marketing to target audiences. You know, that's really what they've become. So I think it, though, if we just look at that, what we see oftentimes is very pedantic. I think a really good example of it would be like the faith-based films, and, you know, some better quality production is really starting to emerge, but I think it's a good example. We can all, you know, acknowledge at least a lot of them have been kind of cheesy and are very on the nose, beating you over the head. They're pedantic. And I don't think that's effective. What I do think is effective is genuine creative expression that just happens to be done through the voice or the lens of somebody who is not coming from a collectivist worldview. And so I think, you know, more of that as an option for the youth is great. And I, you know, I do think there is a movement. The youth are very much engaged. I see a lot of Gen Z. They're being very heavily targeted. I think they're being targeted on both sides. So I think, but there is, I don't like the pendulum swing. I'm unfortunately seeing a lot of Gen Z is going so far in the other direction. And, you know, that can lend itself to authoritarianism as well. And I'm not in favor of that. But I think that we have a lot of hope in creating art that speaks to them, that does, you know, show some, that offers something different. And really, I go back to really on a microcosm even is with the parents, you know, for parents to be inculcating strong values in their children and encouraging their children to have their voice and their freedom to own, you know, own what their creative passions are. You know, that a lot of, I think a lot of children right now are feeling like the way to do that, it looks like by, you know, doing this trans or, you know, having purple hair. And this is not to judge anybody, but it looks like that's individualism, but really it's part of a collectivist cult. They're being pressured into that. Most of them are not coming to that on their own. You know, and you look throughout history, that was not commonplace for 12-year-olds to just decide that they wanted for themselves. So it's coming from somewhere. This is culture creation. So I do think that if the culture is being created, there's hope that we can find a different way.
Which really goes back to what we were talking about before of how do we use sophisticated strategies to do what we want to do. Yep. So we could think outside the box of just fighting and start saying, how do we create a culture that instills the values of truth and love and unity and doesn't, and, you know, if you're biblical, it instills the Judeo-Christian values, right?
Exactly.
How do we create that culture, and how do we create it loud enough that others join? Because I think if it's out there, it will be a magnet, because I believe that light wins every time, right? Mm-hmm. And when you have an opportunity to choose between the positive and the negative, the positive is going to attract more magnetism, in my perspective. And so that is a motivation that keeps Susie and I alive, is that if we keep demonstrating love and acting in our truth, then others will join along, because it does just take everybody to truly radiate and believe in what they believe in, and let go of the socialization pressures that tell us that we should engage in some collective culture that doesn't align with us intuitively.
Yeah. Absolutely. It only takes one candle to drown out the darkness, right? So I agree for sure. Well, I've kept you both. I'm so grateful. I do want to give you guys, if you have anything else you want to impart, you know, we'll put up the links, of course. And I really hope I'm going to be able to make this journey to Geneva I cannot do it without your support. So if you want to see me go and be a part of creating this vision for the future that combats this really roadmap to enslavement. I don't know how else to word it, because that is what they are trying to do. The WHO is an extension of the UN. The UN thinks that they are going to be the governing body of the entire world, that that is how they are behaving. That is the plans they are laying out. They want to put us into an AI world society. If you haven't seen the show that I did on that, definitely go check it out. But you can go get the book yourself. You do have to give an email in order to get it, but it is free. Michael Dukakis wrote it. It is called Remaking the World, the Age of Global Enlightenment. So this is a nod to the New Age movement. As I said, this is a very theosophical religion that they are putting forth that is being guided by the Lucius Trust, which was named Lucifer Publishing. It was a little too on the nose. They did change the name. So if that is not the vision that you have for the world, we need to be a part of creating something different and standing against the enslavement of humanity and the preservation of human 1.0, because they want to make us into cyborgs. And they've already been really effective with the cybernetics. You see this, we keep talking about the division, right? This, you know, the divide and conquer strategy, the splintering, the Hegelian dialectic tactics that they weaponize for psychological and political warfare. And, you know, this is all part of cybernetics. This is part of how algorithms feed us. This is part of how just our neurochemistry and our behavior modification as a result of the screen interface and through, you know, less human in-person human contact. It's all a result of that. And these same social engineers were part of these cybernetics conferences decades ago, are these same groups and same types of people, and in some cases, the same people or their relatives who are now part of these UN symposiums who want to put us in, they want into an AI world society and create digital twins and completely eradicate human 1.0. So all that to say, please support us, please support them. And yeah, thank you so much for what you're doing. I think this is, you know, not just incredibly beautiful, but so incredibly needed. And, you know, I'm so grateful for your courage and for your passion and for your time and your effort and all the resources you put into this. So,
thank you so much, Courtney. It's so great to be on today. And I just want to encourage everyone to support you, because you are someone that's really been an encouragement to me, someone that I followed. So bummed out I didn't get to be at CauseFest. Mm-hmm. I missed my flight. I was with Andrea and missed my flight, actually. But I want to really encourage people to support you and the work that you're doing. I would love, love, love to have you in Geneva. I think that you have such a brilliant and unique mind. The way that you put things together is just phenomenal. So it'd be wonderful to have you in that room and to be a part of that. So please, everyone, support Courtney's road to Geneva. And I just thank you so much for having us here today. It was wonderful. I feel like we could have gone at least an hour on each one of the subjects we touched on. So there might have to be like around 2 and 12 and 45. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it again. Let's do that. Let's plan another one, and we can do a breakdown and go deeper into each of the topics, because I think it's so important. I think that will be really helpful for everyone to really flesh out all of the things, because they're working on so much. And part of the strategy, I think, is this information overwhelm. It's just nobody can keep up with everything. I feel like I'm constantly like, you know, it's like shiny object syndrome. And I'm constantly, and these are not like pleasant shiny objects. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm dodging bullets, but I have to like pull out all of the bulletproof vests each time. And it requires so much research just to combat each thing. You know, one of the big fights that I took on was the NACs, the natural asset companies. And, you know, I went to speak to the state capitol talking about it. This is one of their plans. This is all. And it's, again, it's great marketing under the guise of conservation and protecting the planet. And they even say of their own words that it is more important than the flourishing of humanity. So at the potential detriment of humans, that, you know, we are going to conserve the planet, which will not. I, in my opinion, I don't think that will actually benefit the planet. Some of the most beautiful and most well-preserved land that I have ever seen is privately owned, because they're invested in it. They care about it, and they want to see. And it's also because it's part of the ecosystem, right? If you want to stop a species from going extinct, you should probably raise it to be eaten, because they will not go. There's no danger of cows being extinct, you know? So I think that that's it. But the amount of research I had to do to learn, because it's because their plans are so long range, and you know, it's been in the works for such a long time. You know, one of the other battles that I've been fighting is the education, that I think that really needs to be local. And they go after, this is part of their dialectic strategy, is that they go after the red states with a lot of these things because the people think they're safe. And, you know, that's such an illusion. And Tennessee, you'd be surprised, but they're actually have a lot less parental rights, a lot less freedoms when it comes to homeschooling. And this is because this is one of the ways that they're really trying to get them into the government system, so that because they know a lot of people are awake. So,
yeah.
But the amount of research, you know, for that, because that's a several hundred years old agenda. Yeah. So it's as many of these, and you know, when you start looking into what they're doing with the WHO, none of this is new. It's just really coming to a head. So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you all for watching and listening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.